You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
This is Kristen Farag for the Art World Demystified, and I'm here with Mia Nielsen, curator and head of cultural programming for the Drake Hotel properties, which includes the flagship Drake Hotel on Queen Street West, Drake 150 in the Financial District of Toronto, and Drake Devonshire in Prince Edward County. Mia, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about these locations and how you go about curating art for non-traditional locations like hotel or restaurant?
Sure, I'd love to. It all started on Valentine's Day in 2004 when the Drake Hotel opened on Queen Street West. The Drake had gone through a whole kind of re-envisioning that was by our owner, Jeff Stober. It is a historic building. It's situated in a real thriving cultural community, lots of artist studios, galleries, the wonderful theater center is directly across the street from us. And something kind of magical happened in 2004 because the Drake created this opportunity where the general public came into this area that had been this kind of exclusive, like, creative arts area, and it became a kind of gateway for that neighborhood. A very strong cultural mandate was a part of the Drake from the very beginning. At the time, it was run by Jessica Rose. It was later run by Daniel Borens, and then I took over about 8 years ago. And it's a really interesting space to visit because the artwork is so intrinsic with the space itself. There are a lot of site-specific installations by local artists, some by international artists. There are artists we work with straight out of school. There are others who are very established. And this can take the form of anything from a kinetic installation as you walk in the door by Matt and Susan Gorbett, to monumental piece by Ken Lum. So there's quite a diversity of works from kind of splashy painterly murals to other works that are much more subtle. Each location has a very different personality and kind of holds a different place within that neighborhood. So downtown we have a restaurant, Drake 150, that's been there for 2 years. That location runs on an annual exhibition program, so the entire space changes once a year. Currently we're showing the work of Gary Baseman, who's a wonderful illustrator from LA and installation artist and performance artist and painter and does so many amazing things. So this is our first solo show in that location, and he's totally re-envisioned the restaurant, which was an amazing project to work on because he was really interested in the culture of restaurants and how people come, to eat, to drink, but a cultural engagement isn't necessarily their kind of top of mind walking into a restaurant. And with the various locations, we kind of turn that on its head. And we create very genuine cultural experiences and within these food and beverage zones, and hopefully create moments where we take people out of themselves a little bit, and they question, what is that? What is that sculpture on the wall? Why? What does it mean to have that particular image there?
So, how does putting art in say a hotel, how does that compare with say a commercial gallery? Or I mean, why would the owner do that? That concept of art within a commercial environment that's not really necessarily an art venue.
Sure. So it works, I think, on a number of different levels. It because we started with the hotel, it was an opportunity to immediately immerse travelers in that environment, working, you know, with a lot of local artists and Canadian artists. We give them a very genuine kind of connection with what's actually happening and being made in Toronto, you know, and on any given day. Mm. The exhibition program at the hotel changes quite frequently. We have 5 exhibitions a year that are in the lobby itself. And then all the other zones have works that can be in place anywhere from a year to indefinite.
And so it's become known actually as an art hotel. I guess
sure.
People are drawn to stay there for that experience.
Yeah, we offer a very different experience than, you know, than for instance like any a kind of chain hotel. Mm-hmm. The rooms are designed so to maximize service and efficiency. Service is definitely the backbone of what we do. We often describe kind of all the services we offer, whether it's hospitality or food and drink or culture, that, you know, the goal is to elevate everything to the, you know, mm-hmm. like we're always just trying to outdo ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for interesting meetings. And so the hotel rooms are designed to maximize that efficiency and that comfort and, you know, all the things that you want a hotel to be. In addition, we have a long-standing artist-in-residence program, and so every hotel room at the flagship hotel and then at our country property, the Drake Devonshire, each room has original works in them, some of them site-specific, some of them more traditional, you know, painting, drawing, photography, and they tell a story of the history of the Drake, the history of that room, and they allow for different kinds of connections. Team Macho, a wonderful Toronto collective, did 40-something paintings for the Drake Devonshire, where we acquired historic works, and they improved upon them. So that was... And in doing so... They create these installations that are very much connected to the past, entrenched in the history, and it being a rural area, history is important, but also updates, kind of modernizes these works with a new contemporary voice in a way that I think is kind of emblematic of everything that we do at the Drake.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself... must be extremely busy looking after these 3 properties, and how do you keep on top of all of that?
There's never a dull moment, and I don't know. Sometimes I describe, extraordinary opportunities require extraordinary measures. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting to work in an organization where you have the opportunity to make your own rules and then break them. Mm-hmm. And as curator, I think I have extraordinary freedom. I have almost a clean slate for anything.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Wow.
And so within that role, I'm able to identify opportunities. For instance, working on a new construction project, I had a space that was deemed for a wall work, and under construction I went and looked at the space and I'm like, no, this is like This is the last place where we want to wall work. The sight lines are compromised in too many ways, mm-hmm. and it's really about the void of the space and how do I create a cultural experience within that void. Mm-hmm. So I go in and I present these, you know, I said, you know, this is, you want a wall work, this is why it needs to be something else, and, you know, most of the time I'm convincing. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of support, which is amazing. And in managing the three properties, I think we're a really close-knit team. Mm-hmm. So I visit the Devonshire about every 2 weeks. However, if there's any kind of question or anything goes wrong, I'm always notified immediately. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I can kind of address it. That way, I work with an incredible property manager who has a history as an art installer, and he is a genius. So that's amazing. And then I work with some really great independent installers. So so the team's always kind of, it's very dynamic, mm-hmm. and it kind of grows and, you know, or ebbs and flows. Depending on what we're working on at any given time.
And you do a lot of collaborations with other organizations and festivals that are happening in the city.
Totally.
As well, so that there's a real interconnection with, mm-hmm. with other events that are going on. And is there anyone that comes to mind that was of interest or
those? Partnerships, I think, they're a backbone of the culture of the Drake of every property, and they allow for so many amazing things to happen. So, and that could be something as kind of straightforward as a collaboration with Nuit Blanche, which we have, which is an all-night contemporary art festival that happens in Toronto. The first Saturday in October every mm-hmm. year. We've done Nuit Blanche huge for 10 years on Queen Street, always with an installation on the facade of the building, mm-hmm. which is often quite a feat of sheer devotion mm-hmm. because, you know, sometimes we're installing the piece for 2 days and it's up for mm-hmm. 12 hours yes. overnight. But it's always spectacular, and it's amazing to be out there and to see all these faces that are and literally hundreds, sometimes thousands of people stopping traffic, standing on the street, staring up at the building, and, you know, and having that moment that takes them out of themselves, mm-hmm. having that moment that kind of changes how they think that culture can exist in an urban space. So this year, kind of up the ante as we do, and we're collaborating with Nuit Blanche at the downtown location Drake 150 and bringing in an epic piece by Friends With You. The piece is called Light Cave, and it's a inflated sculpture that is 25 feet tall and 55 feet long.
Wow.
So it's this beautiful kind of like rainbow passage. It's like a temple. It's incredible.
That you pass through, go mm-hmm. into?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'll be, so, I mean, Nuit Blanche is amazing and something that we always look forward to. We collaborate with other arts organizations in town, whether it's the Power Plant Contemporary Art Gallery to host events, Canadian Art Foundation, we collaborate with them a lot to do all mm-hmm. kinds of amazing things from tours to talks to pop-ups, all kinds of things. And the Toronto International Art Fair is another close partner of ours. We have an opportunity to exhibit at the fair, which is always interesting in that, you know, we kind of pull apart our model and have an exhibition at the fair that could be a kind of more traditional white cube kind of exhibition that I never have a chance to do at the at any of our locations because they are immersive spaces. Or last year, we kind of ran it as an artist studio and brought in three artists, Jennifer Murphy, Rick Leong, and Rebecca Lads, all from across Canada at different points in their career. And they had never met before this, and they were extraordinarily open-minded about this crazy idea that I had. And they came into the space, and they made work together. So all of their works could be associated with collage, so that was essentially what happened. Rick would make these incredibly delicate painted shapes. Rebecca might cut them out. And then the three of them would collage directly on the wall, and the three of them were working on each on individual works and coming together and making works together. So it was a very different exhibition for an art fair in the sense that
it was happening right there.
Yeah, and that selling art wasn't our primary goal.
Right.
You know, we were interested in creating. Like replicating that kind of that vibrancy, that energy that you have at all of our different venues, kind of outside that context. I should also mention that the like each of the Drakes, they're not just exhibition venues; they're also performance venues.
Yes.
We have music performances every night at each location. We do everything from like a you know sweaty dirty DJ party to live bands to pop-up opera to dance performances to immersive theater so it each location in addition to having amazing food and incredible cocktails and like all wonderful things in a sense, you almost don't know what to expect every time you go to one of our locations because you don't necessarily know who's going to greet you at the door or what might spontaneously happen while you're there.
And how do you go about choosing artists and work for your to show?
I'm asked that a lot, and it's a really hard question to answer. In each location, I'm interested in creating a balance of local, national, and international representation. So that's kind of always one thing that's in my head. At times, I'm challenged that we don't show exclusively Canadian artists, to which I respond that I think it's essential to show work that is made locally, that in or nationally, but that to understand why that is important, or what is it about those works that are vibrant and you know and essential, it's great to have an understanding or kind of an international context of what is happening at different places. It could be anywhere from New York to Tokyo, and anywhere in between, and so creating that balance is something that I think about a fair bit, and it can take different forms. I mean, certainly the exhibition that we have now at the hotel is almost entirely Canadian artists, but there's a lot of international representation within the longer term installation.
Yes.
So you see things from different places. I'm always interested in showing works that offer an entry point to a lot of different people. Each of our
You're
locations,
about the audience now,
yeah,
an entry point for different types of people who happen to come into the venue.
Yeah, because you know that, and that's what's exciting to me about programming for a non-traditional space is that we literally get everyone. We get, you know, moms and babes and bankers and club kids and everybody in between. It is, and it's amazing that we have developed this reputation where, you know, I mean, like, you'll literally see, you know, four generations of a family sitting together in any of our locations. But
so
also
how to keep all those different generations interested.
Yeah, and
engaged. Yeah.
And give them something to, you know, maybe something they have never seen before. Maybe it is something they've seen before. But also to be mindful and that, you know, we are a cultural venue. And so to always keep pushing the envelope of essential culture. And so, you know, like, some of the most kind of gratifying conversations that I have are when I'm talking to, like, a curator in the National Gallery who came in with his kids, and everyone has something that they really connected with. So, yeah, I don't have kind of an easy answer for anything specific that I show, because we literally show everything from video installations to street art to, you know, academic kind of conceptual works or fine illustration. We do find, like, you know, there is a venue for almost anything. But I'm always looking for works that are, like, I don't know, kind of maybe bold or arresting in some capacity. I often describe that and this is a very personal philosophy, but that if you have to read a didactic panel before you have an entry point into a work, then it is not a visual. It's not a work of visual art. It's something else. It's and not to say that that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that when curating these particular venues, I'm looking for works that are visually impactful. And allow for different readings by all kinds of people.
Conversations.
Totally.
Between different people.
Totally. And that's always awesome to be like, oh, we had a wonderful mural on the Sky Art by Balanzacco for years, and periodically I'd be, you know, up there having a meeting or, you know, having brunch with my son or something. And you'd overhear the table next door going like, what is going on with, was that there before? And they would have these conversations about each of the different figures and what the interaction, you know, what was actually happening between them. And that's always a thrill.
And so what drew you to curating in the...
I've always had a keen interest in public space. Before coming to the Drake, I was an independent curator for 7 years. I had a business called Quiver Projects, where I promoted contemporary Canadian art internationally. That was the goal, and I was interested in alternative avenues to do that. I never had a standalone gallery. I did all kinds of collaborations with sometimes commercial galleries in the States. I worked exclusively for Sotheby's.com in the early days of online art sales, and that was an amazing opportunity to and how kind of wide-reaching art collecting was, that you know, that I could have clients in Amsterdam, in Barbados, in all across the States.
Get a perspective on why people chose different works,
totally.
What was interesting to people.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And learn about all these different personalities. Like, you know, to generalize, people collecting art in New York City have different philosophies and different goals, all kinds of things from, you know, collectors in Paris. And it was really interesting to, and these were sometimes seasoned collectors, these were young collectors, people who were just experimenting and trying out different ideas, and making those connections was really interesting to me and really gratifying. And then as kind of like with the dip and kind of online art sales kind of dried up there for a while, kind of died out. And then I took it in another direction, and that was when I started doing more collaboration with galleries, and I curated some museum shows, including an exhibition in Denmark at Kunsthalle Brændavigrøn. And that was fascinating because it's in a fairly small community, and I had an opportunity to come in and do a solely Canadian show. And they were unbelievably generous. And I had this monumental sculpture from a Max Stryker that, you know, at its height is 18 feet tall, like almost 30 feet long. And I needed a flat rooftop. They found one, and it was on the train line, so the commuters saw it every day.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing. And they gave, like, and in my experience at the time, unprecedented access to public space. And I was amazed, you know, coming from a place where I had felt like, you know, art viewing has a kind of, unfortunately, and it's my life's work to break this down, but it kind of, I think a lot of Canadians feel excluded from the art world. They feel like, you know, art is something that happens somewhere else, and you know, they assume that isn't something that they will understand or something that they are somehow allowed to be connected to.
Art history always took place someplace else.
Yeah,
somehow.
exactly.
And then art is in galleries, which often people don't necessarily go to.
So to do this exhibition in Denmark and have like only Canadian artists and be swarmed by people at the opening and have so many people come and see, you know, kinetic sculptures and videos and site-specific works and you know, an installation that was on a bicycle. You had to ride the bicycle around town to experience the work. And to work with these audiences who were so playful and so open to anything, I thought, that's what I want to do. This is it. This is the promised land for me. So, you know, I was continuing to work as an independent. I came back to Toronto from doing that exhibition and actively sought out space, like public spaces, and which led me to curate an exhibition at the Drake, and I loved it. I loved that, you know, people would come in at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, you know, or 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and their prime objective was to dance their face off. But on the way down the stairs, you know, they would say to their friend, "Wow, what's that? What's..." And so that was, you know, started with one exhibition, and then one thing led to another, and 8 years later.
So these three properties, they've also created sort of ripple effects in their locations as well. Like, for example, for sure the Drake on Queen Street, you know, it was... I believe it was slated for demolition. It was at one point. It was nobody saw the value in it, and it was sort of that was you know, part of a whole regeneration of that neighborhood.
Yeah, kind of renaissance of that neighborhood. And the building itself is really, really quite extraordinary, in that I feel like in Toronto we have this terrible habit of demolishing old buildings, that the idea is that it's, you know, I'm speculating, but like that it's too costly, it's too this or that, it's too onerous to keep up an old building. What else can you say except that Jeff is truly a visionary, like hands down. He was the one who came in, he bought that building in November 2001, and he saw and continues to this day to see opportunities that other people simply don't see. And he saw that in the Devonshire as well. He started traveling to Prince Edward County years before we acquired the Devonshire, and then it was a few years in renovating. And he just has some kind of sixth sense that other people don't have.
A lot of artists have moved to that area now. It's really
totally.
A lively.
And musicians, like there's, and it's cool too because, you know, the Drake becomes this kind of home away from home. And so one of the things we do with the Devonshire is we have an open mic night every Tuesday that is unbelievable. The talent out there is, I mean, I was literally slack-jawed the first time I joined one of those open mics. I just couldn't believe it. And it becomes a kind of magnet for people who are looking for some kind of cultural engagement, or someone who wants, like sometimes people who want to offer that to their friends or family, you know, and these locations become this really interesting kind of entry point into culture. Where, you know, chances are, you know, grandma's not going to be intimidated to go to a restaurant. You know, she's gonna do that with you, or you know, or whoever it is in your life. And you know, then like I said, kids. Like I love showing kids around.
So I guess the location itself, in the sense that it's say a restaurant or a hotel, there's a consistency there, but the ability to create change all the time brings a lot of energy and people coming back because there's who are interested in something new, a different conversation and different ideas.
There's something democratic about a hotel restaurant spaces that people just wander around, and you know, I say that lightly, but like in the sense that, you know, anyone can just go in, and there's no, you know, there's no kind of uncomfortable spirit or thinking that, you know, they have to go get something or be smart enough or whatever it is. And I love that open mind and this opportunity to introduce. So one of the things that we did at the Devonshire this year, this being our first kind of full high season up there, I'd said to Jeff before that part of what was so interesting to me about the county, about the Devonshire itself, is the land around the hotel. We have this lovely stream, the fish spawn there, salmon in the fall, trout in the spring, and these big trees, this kind of bucolic, like kind of wooded area. And what does it mean to show contemporary sculpture there? And it's honestly been so fascinating and so gratifying that to work with people like Trevor Wheatley and Cosmo Dean, who are two young Toronto-based artists who are doing some really interesting kind of text-based intervention in landscape. They did a piece over the stream that's been really, really well received. Gordon Monahan, who's an extraordinary artist. He's has the Order of Canada. He's very, very well recognized. Did a site-specific installation of a piano that plays these ghostly sounds, and that runs in all seasons. So people exploring that piece, you know, trying to figure out how it works. And in all seasons, you know, like, and that piano is deteriorating, and it has just this really beautiful patina, and this kind of it's own little monument. And then Zeke Moores, an artist originally from Newfoundland, who is interested in this kind of intersection of culture and labor, installed a bronze cast dumpster. It's so beautiful. It's a life-size dumpster. It glitters like gold, and that's one of those things that, you know, people don't really know what to make of it. Sometimes they're like, and you know, to some it's like it's kind of a joke, like, oh, they're so fancy they get a gold dumpster, and others who kind of see it as more of like this kind of like obelisk. Kind of modernist piece.
Is there anything in the dumpster?
No. And we check the dumpster at least a couple of times a day.
I imagine.
Because people periodically do throw garbage into it. But that's part of the experience of it. You know, that's part of that, and that's part of that delicious gray area with that piece of like, how do I approach this? This is taken out of context. And yeah, it's great. I love that piece. I'll be sad when that goes back to Zeke.
Uh-huh.
But next summer, we'll do a completely different exhibition of outdoor works, new commissions, and activate different areas. I still really want to do something with the water itself.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, it's on Lake Ontario. It's like an ocean. Mm-hmm. It's massive. But I'm not daunted.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Sounds very exciting. Constant change, and always something new.
Mm-hmm.
That's great job you have.
Thanks.
And so I would like to thank you very much for being with us today. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about yourself and what inspires you in your work? And
first of all, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. It's really fun to kind of talk about what we do at the Drake in this kind of larger kind of cultural context. And you know, I guess like what really drives me as a programmer and a curator is opening culture for diverse audiences.
Right.
And creating these spaces where our guests are equally welcomed, challenged, and also you know, creating a sense of beauty and enjoyment, even though that's kind of sometimes a little complicated, right? Sometimes you have to add a little bite for it to be like, you know, really beautiful. And working with artists and collectives and curators who are really pushing boundaries, like Lazy Mom. I think Lazy Mom's are really amazing. They're a collective from New York, and having an installation of theirs recently installed in the lounge, and being open to how art changes your space, changes your environment, changes the way you feel about it,
mm-hmm.
and being kind of always open and welcoming for that.
Well, Mia Nelson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Kristen.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.